Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today, we're looking at 8 things you should know about Emil Zátopek and how he changed running forever.
Forever and ever.
Forever and ever. And we're doing this because on the 19th of September, we will mark the 100th year of Emil Zátopek, who was voted by a source no less esteemed than Runner's World as history's greatest ever runner. And we want to discuss why. And Kate Carter's here, who is a Zátopek aficionado, aren't you?
Yeah, big fan.
There you go.
So I thought maybe, Kate, then you could sort of run anyone who's not familiar with Zátopek, Ben. Kate can run you through
guilty.
Here's a quick overview for anyone who's not kind of a complete Zátopek sort of, you know, fan as I am. Could you tell us a little bit, just give us a sense of the man?
So, I mean, Zátopek is a obviously a huge name back in the Czech Republic or Czechia or whatever that you'd like to call it these days. He was a pretty huge name in the world, really, for a long time. So he was born in 1922 in what was then Czechoslovakia. And he actually began running when he was a teenager. And he was working in a shoe factory at the time. And I think they had like a sports day equivalent. Right. And he did it. And he turned out to be quite good. And he thought, okay, I'll give this a bit more of a bash. And within about minutes, he was setting kind of national records and so on. He joined the Czechoslovak army. And he was sort of training really seriously. He was allowed to train quite a lot because he was already kind of quite famous there. And he kind of created a whole new style of training, which we'll talk about a bit more later. He is still the only person today who has won gold medals in the Olympics in the 5,000, 10,000 and marathon at the same Olympics, which he did in 1952 in Helsinki. But he was also quite vocal against kind of the oppression from the Soviets. So he was involved in the protests in 1968 in the Prague Spring, and that basically led to him being stripped of his rank from the army. He was expelled from the army, and he was kind of forced to. He had to go and work down kind of mines, which was really bad for his health. And he was kind of he sort of disappeared from public life, kind of shamed figure. I mean, that didn't really change until the Velvet Revolution in 1989, when he was kind of rehabilitated by Havel and the Czech government, and sort of became a national icon again. And he died in 2000. He was only 78, and he died from complications following a stroke, which I think they think is related to the way he was treated.
Oh, wow. Right. Yeah. What a life.
What a figure,
yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, I will hold my hands up and say, like, I obviously know of the man and the name, but my sort of knowledge kind of ends quite quickly beyond that, in terms of like, he's a name within running that I'm very aware of, but it's not like I'm like, this guy, he changed a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm this is going to be an education for me.
Well, it actually is interesting because I remember Richard Ashcliff, who wrote the one of the biographies on Zátopek called Today We Die Little, and he was really surprised that no one had written the kind of definitive biography, because he was like, this life is amazing. And like, we talked to people about it, and I was like, he's the Hamilton of running. Zátopek is the Hamilton of running. He had that kind of influence, and he sort of still flies under the radar outside of running circles. People don't realize what an incredible he had and what his legacy actually is in running. So it's great to revisit it. So we've got eight points, and we're trying to make it as like relevant and up to date as possible. So like, each point we say, look, this is actually perhaps why running looks like it does today. Not always directly, but it can be related to something that Zátopek did. So I'll go off for the first one. He showed us that nice guys can finish first. So Richard Ashcliff has written a piece for the current issue runner's world on this, but he said, Emil had no trace of the venom with which many approach athletics. He was someone who encouraged other runners, sometimes even in the middle of a race, and openly shared his training methods. So one of his rivals, Ron Clark, said, Zatopek took the view that you want everyone to run at their best. It's a competition that's exciting, not standing on the rostrum. And it's kind of, I think that the legacy of that is like how quite a few athletes now, particularly like the FKT and Ultra World, are just really happy to like sort of share their training methods or go and like crew for someone and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It's quite a bit more open than maybe it was back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's the whole notion of being in the holding area before a race and everyone's trying to psych each other out and be like, you know, the race is won in that room rather than actually on the track or anywhere, because it's like, I'm going to get you and I'm, you know.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, going against that and being encouraging of all and trying to sort of like keep the race as the, you know, as he says, like, if everyone's running at their best, then it's going to be the best race it can possibly be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's why you see, like, even today, and you know, you watch like an amazing event, you actually just see everyone's gone all out. Like, you can see that's just, you know, you get those races where everyone's holding off and being incredibly like restricted or
sort of tactical
or boring or whatever, however you want to phrase it.
I think it was very unusual, wasn't it, at that time to see that kind of sportsmanship happening.
And especially sort of in something, the Olympics or something, where you are essentially competing for your country, so your kind of rivalry is national as well as just personal. And he kind of really crossed those lines, you know, because also particularly when it was behind the Iron Curtain, you know, we were supposed to think that all the people behind the Iron Curtain were bad.
Yes.
Did they even love their children too? Clearly been listening to too much Sting there. But he sort of showed that just people.
Yeah.
We're all just people.
Totally.
I like this one.
Go on.
He didn't care about looking good. Right. His running style was uncharitably compared to a man juggling an octopus on a conveyor belt, which is pretty funny. But he didn't care, saying, I will start running with perfect style when they start judging races for their beauty, like figure skating. Right? That's also a hot take from his comeback.
His quotes are incredible. It's another reason to love him, definitely.
Yeah. I think that feels incredibly relevant today because it's the sort of increasing focus on the aesthetic of running. You know, the way that you look and the way that product is marketed and brands push a style and all those sorts of things. And also
the way that people are, I think, kind of overly obsessed with like having the perfect form.
Oh, and gait. You've got to have a gait analysis and da, 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 da. And it's completely that, isn't it? It's kind of like you're kind of striving more to look like you're running fast than actually running fast.
Yeah. I mean, sort of like in my sort of, you know, with my coaching hat on, I had someone ask me the other day, how do I like improve my form? How do I like run better? And I was like, well, what's the problem? And he's like, oh no, there's no problem. why does it matter then? Like,
totally.
Like, if you're running twice a week, you can gain a hell of a lot more from running three times a week than you can from sort of some idealized notion in your head of what the perfect runner looks like. And he shows that there is no such thing really as the perfect runner. You know, there's lots of examples that disprove that, aren't there? I mean, from kind of Paula Radcliffe with her head tilt and
totally,
you know, lots of people like, you know, even amazing elite athletes over pronate and over stride and do all the things we're not supposed to do and still do incredible things.
There's a great story that Andy Dixon, the editor, says, and he did a gait analysis next to Mo Farah, and they said, purely in terms of like more efficient running style, it's you, Andy. it's you. You're more efficient than Mo Farah. His 10K time is about 10 minutes quicker than yours. But so it goes to show you that it's not figure skating. It's kind of, it's how quick you go rather than how good you look. But he was very good at kind of expressing that, I think. I think this is your one, Kate, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a bit of a sort of an urban myth that he basically invented interval training. He didn't invent interval training, but he did apply it in a whole different way that had never really been kind of applied before. So like the concept of a fartlek had been around for a while. I think that was invented in like the 1930s. And there was like a whole kind of, there was a German coach just before the war, the Second World War, who kind of actually trained his athletes on heart rate, which is quite interesting because we think of that being really modern.
Yeah.
But what Zatopek did was kind of, he took the concept of like running faster in short bursts and just went to town with it.
Yeah.
And he kind of used himself as a bit of a guinea pig almost. And so he just did these massive volumes. I mean, it was kind of insane, but it does sound insane. He would do like 40 times 400 in the morning and then 40 times 400 in the afternoon. Yeah, I mean, it's nuts. Some days he apparently did like 100 times 400, which, you know. But then I think what sounds insane about that is that if we went to the track and did 10 times 400, we would do it at like all out or sort of as close as we can as long distance runners to all out pace. He actually was kind of... what he actually was doing was sometimes he would do them slower.
Yeah.
So he was kind of doing sometimes tempo runs, sometimes interval sessions. It's just that he sort of did them all in the same kind of duration, essentially.
Yeah, right.
It's like no one ever told him you could do 800 or something.
Yeah. God, this track, I don't know, every 400s are really getting me down. This is really like...
Yeah, it's amazing though, isn't it? I think that's all part of his legend, is this idea of like, could you really go and run 100 times 400 meters? And I think often he was doing it on his own, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of internal motivation to push yourself incredibly, you know, far on your own, possibly in some questionable footwear.
I mean, maybe army boots.
Army boots.
Yes.
Wow.
My feet hurt just thinking about it. Yeah.
So, yeah. And his great quote about that was, he said, when someone said, like, why are you doing all this 400 meters? You're like you're a 10K man, you know. He said... why should I practice running slow? I already know how to run slow. I want to learn to run fast. I mean, there's logic there, isn't there?
That's a perfect logic.
He was very quick as well.
I think the greatest fact about this guy is that he had just the best responses.
Yeah.
You know when you have, like, someone says something to you and you go, this, yes, and then an hour later you're like, God, I've got it now. Now I know what to say.
Yeah.
He had it off the bat.
Oh, look, actually, that leads us very smoothly to the next point, which is he's running's most quotable figure.
Oh, great.
And I think, like other running legends, like Steve Prefontaine is probably the other greatly quoted runner, I would say. But Zapik had a way with words. One of his most famous quotes sums up his romantic view of distance running. He said, an athlete cannot run with money in his pockets. He must run with hope in his heart and dreams in his head. And another classic one is, men, today we die a little, which he said at the start line of a very hot Australian 1956 Olympic marathon. So he had that way of, I guess he, like... In our kind of modern world of like slightly anodyne responses to questions, Zatopek could really breathe some poetry and sort of personality.
Yeah, he wasn't media trained.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But just as he has such like, he clearly just had a big personality, and you can see that in all his friendships and all the people that kind of remember him and so on. And obviously, you can't like invent that out of nothing if you don't have it. There's not people like that don't come along all the time, but I think we have kind of gone too far the other way with, like, the, as you said, the media training and the kind of the anodyne kind of post race soundbite where they all sort of just say the same thing, and it's not memorable, which doesn't help the sport either.
There have been I mean, more and more you kind of see, perhaps on the States, I've seen a few sort of collegiate kind of post race things. And there's been a bit more of that because you're getting all these young guys who haven't had any of the training, and they just start talking about things. And they're obviously buzzing because they've just finished a race.
Yeah,
so they're just like, yeah. Da, da, da. And then one guy was like, these shoes, man, they're killing everything. You know, and like, it was just like, all of a sudden, he's just like, whoa, cool, this guy's fun. He's just like, yeah. And it's, you know, that's when you sort of go, oh, this is, you know, that's kind of almost what you'd get, I think.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
Refreshing. Well, it's also probably kind of more, if you took that generation and applied the sort of logic now, like, no one, you don't get someone at the start of a thing going, men, today we die a little, do we?
I have done that at the start of a race before. I did get some very blank looks, but I just really wanted to.
You really wanted to say it.
Yeah.
I guess someone like, do you think Usain Bolt in some ways, different kind of character, but he had that kind of personality, that X factor, and that was, he became kind of transcended the sport as a result of not only his running, but his personality as well.
Yeah, and I think we like athletics, certainly, like, and running is, you know, part of athletics, really needs that. I mean, that's the sort of, you know, you get those figures once in a blue moon, and that's why they're so valuable, because they do transcend the sport and they become these kind of global
superstars.
So we certainly kind of need, it'd be good to have a few more of them.
Agreed,
in one go, rather than just the one.
Yeah. Next generation, out there.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, he's a man of great principle. As he stood up for what he believed in, and he used his platform to affect social change and was prepared to suffer the consequences of speaking his mind, which is what we touched on, well, what Kate touched on in the intro. In 1968, he vanished from public leading protests in the Prague Spring, only reappearing, being allowed back after the Velvet Revolution, as he said, in 1989. So, you know, that merging of when running becomes political.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so much a thing anymore, but like, obviously, if you're someone of importance, the modern world of celebrity, shall we say, doesn't really have the same impact. But you know, back in the day, athletes and people were seen as that sort of like, you know, figureheads, and they were representing their nation. And it's all that kind of like that high end level of like towing the line.
Yeah. And he didn't just say what he thought. He literally led protests. He was like, you know, in front of Soviet tanks in Wenceslas Square in Prague and stuff. He was there on the streets, you know, kind of leading people, and sort of weird, like very, very pre social media age, word got round about this, and people, you know, who perhaps wouldn't have came out. Fortunately, you know, didn't lead to anything at the time, but you know, it's all important. And I was thinking about that, like, kind of, you know, you think about also in 1968, the Black Power salute at the Olympics. You know, did it do anything at that point? No, not really. But it's a hugely important symbolic gesture that's now kind of still resonates. And I think, you know, what Zatopek did has the same force in Czech Republic, say, as that does, obviously not sort of perhaps internationally. Because, I don't know, it's, for whatever reason, but you know, these symbols are so important, and you know, sport has this massive power because of the kind of the love of somebody like that, you know, because you love him for what he does and how he kind of runs his heart out, and so when he says something, you really listen. Yeah.
It's hard to think of a modern equivalent.
Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah, true.
Because he sort of suffered the consequence of his sport, because he wasn't playing, was he, for a lot of that season?
And
prepared to kind of, yeah, take the backlash of that and lead on it. I think that's possibly the parallel, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, anyone who sort of refused to take the knee and as a result of that, you know, they did face sanctions, you know.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, huge amount of abuse on social media and so on.
Yeah. Loss of sponsors. Everything.
And I suppose on a much smaller scale, there's been like people who've spoken out about, I don't know, I think like Alison Felix speaking out against kind of policy on maternity leave and women in sport and so on. And, you know, people who have principles and who are, you know, full of integrity and who say what they think are, you know, I think ultimately the winners. Oh, this is my favourite story about Zatopek, which kind of always makes me slightly well up. he had all these friendships in sport. I mean, everyone who should have been his rival was immediately converted to his friend. And somehow, despite being from behind the Iron Curtain, he seemed to end up having people around for dinner an amazing amount. So he was a really good, became really good friends with Ron Clark, who obviously another, you know, amazing runner, who due to various reasons, never won an Olympic gold. You know, just a bad combination of, you know, altitude, races and injuries. And it comes every 4 years, like you say. So there's this story about how Zaspec invited Ron Clark to come round, and he, you know, he came to Prague, or and he came round for dinner with Emil and his wife. As he left, you know, they talked about everything and everything. And it, as they left, Zatopek pressed a little parcel into his hand and said, "Oh, this is, you know, this is for you," but didn't make a big thing of it. And I think Ron Clark thought it was something that maybe like contraband that he was smuggling out, maybe even something for the press or something. Right. So he didn't like, you know, he didn't even look at it. He just put it in his bag. And I think he was, I don't know if he'd got home or maybe he even was sitting on the plane. He sort of thought, "Oh, well, now I'm safe to look at it." And he opened it. And it was one of Zatopek's gold Olympic medals, and with a note saying, you know, you deserve this.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah.
Like, you know, to give away something like that.
Yeah.
To someone who, I mean, it's just mind blowing. I can't even get my head around that.
Yeah. And such a gesture just kind of like runners, that sort of real, very much like the internal respect, the internal ring of respect of like that high end, like actually. I 100% see, he could see his value, he could see his ability, his talent, and it didn't, that one, maybe it didn't go for, you know, it didn't, he didn't have that race that every 4 years that meant he had a gold, but Zatopek saw that he was a gold medalist.
Yes, you know what I mean? Absolutely. Like he was worthy of this.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's that sort of validation from your peers. Like it's kind of, it's
I
like,
know,
yeah.
But it's extraordinary to go from, I think there's very few people who would go from, "Oh, you know, mate, you should have won a gold."
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great race. Yeah. Yeah. Great race. Thanks.
It's such a shame you never won a gold. To here is one of mine. Yeah. You know, here is one of the things that is the pinnacle of anyone's career, and I'm just going to give it to you, like, and make no big deal about it either. And apparently Zatopek didn't tell anyone about this at all for years, and obviously Ron Clark told everybody, but
because they went, "Ron, what's that?"
Yeah, hang on, how'd you get that? Wait a second. But apparently his wife didn't know about it either, Zatopek's. So like no one really knew, just like low-key.
It makes it even better, doesn't it, rather than the sort of like kind of virtue signaling.
Totally. Kind
of just gave away my medal.
Yeah.
No big deal.
Oh, weirdly, that got leaked to the press. If it happened now. Exactly.
On Twitter within seconds.
This next one is my number one reason why I think Zaspec is amazing. I think he flouted convention. He was a complete original. He did things like running in the bathtub to sort of dry his military kit and doing intervals or running around the woods with his wife Dana on his back.
He was also an Olympian, by the way.
She's like
javelin.
And high intensity, high mileage training, all these things were like really pioneering and creating a new way of training rather than just sort of following what you're told to do. I think that's a sign of like, it's a bit of a running genius in that sense, like somebody really like pushed running on and was actually did stuff that a lot of people were like, "What on earth are you doing that for?"
Yeah, and like utter commitment as well, because the running in the bathtub thing, I think, was when it was particularly icy and snowy outside, right. Which, you know, I mean, he would have run in any weather, but it must have been like literally kind of snowed in or something. So he put like a bunch of clothes in water in the bathtub and then ran on them because they kind of moved. So basically kind of invented
like
a sort of treadmill. Yeah, really, really dangerous treadmill. Do not try this at home. So like that kind of utter commitment to still doing what you need to do. Yeah.
And I like the idea of like, and a lot of best coaches say this. I think Tom Craggs often talks about this, like you as an individual are going to have a way of training that's not like going to be about a generic or following a generic training plan. You actually need to listen to what's going to work for you, even if maybe some of that might seem quite unorthodox. Yeah. You know, the kind of marathon training that's going to work for you might be quite different to me or to Kate. And I think Zatopek maybe gives you the confidence to think, you know what, this might seem a bit strange, but I'm going to give it a go because maybe it's going to work for me.
I mean, that's one of the biggest things we have with training. Whenever we're like putting content out or talking on this podcast with athletes and coaches, we talk about training and you're trying to prescribe a method to the masses. And it's kind of like, how are you going to do it? And it's like the main thing we're trying to convey is that you've got to try many different things because one of them might work for you and the others probably won't. And you kind of then you see someone who's like Emil and is just like, "I'm just going to try whatever. Just going to go ahead and just do this stuff and then I'll get to the point where I've worked out what works for me." And you kind of go, that's the key.
Yeah. Like, I think Ron Hill was good at this stuff as well, right? He was happy to experiment on his body with nutrition and that kind of thing.
Oh, I mean, yeah. And yeah.
I think with Zatopek as well is also he was inventing stuff, but he was also getting ideas from everywhere. So I think the carrying his wife thing came from, like, he saw that some athletes, I'm not sure kind of which ones particularly, maybe it was sprinters, I don't know, were doing lots of weight training. So he was like, okay, I need to try and see if weight training helps. And, you know, he didn't have kind of Amazon Prime for some kettlebells. So he carried his wife.
Yeah, amazing. It's brilliant.
I mean, this is kind of almost a summary of all of his achievements, but he proved that running is a force for good. Zatopek was racing during the Cold War era, but through his sportsmanship, he demonstrated that he didn't have to dislike people to compete against them. And again, it's Mr. Asquith thinks this is as relevant today as it's ever been, writing, "The world is again polarized and overshadowed by the threat of all-out war. Running remains a force for good, but the tides of history may be turning against it. We could do with another Zatopek today."
Yeah. Bring on another Zatopek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Someone, because he did have that incredible ability to kind of bring people together. And, you know, there's lots of stories of how he tried to help people who were, you know, kind of couldn't get visas and stuff like this, where his influence obviously did wane, and he had some awful times when he was kind of pushed out. But he was always trying to use his kind of power, as it were, for good. And yeah, do the best that he could with it.
Do you think that any of your admiration for Zatopek is because you have Czech heritage as well, or do you get a sense of, does he mean a lot more to people in that part of the world?
I think he does, just because, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm half Czech, so, like, obviously I do have that kind of connection. And he is a sort of bigger figure there. Even things like, he was involved in the setting up of the Prague Marathon. It's, you know, towards the end of his life, obviously. So he just kind of
just ran a track.
Yeah,
he made everyone stop after 400 meters. It took ages.
Yeah. Yes, and there's a special prize if you carry your wife for the entire race.
Yeah, I was thinking, if people want to celebrate Zatopek in style on the 19th of September, one way would be doing some intervals, and this is apparently one of his more doable sessions. So it's 5 times 200 meters.
Okay.
20 times 400 meters, and then 5 times 200 meters, all with 200-meter jogs in between.
Spicy.
And as Kate was saying, you can potentially do some of those 400s a little bit slower and some a bit quicker. Still a big session, isn't it, that?
I think that's what Zatopek called a warm-up.
It's a warm-up session, yeah. Do the Zatopek warm-up.
What's most telling about that is that if we printed anything like that, there would have to be a pace guide with it. Do you see what I mean? Like, that's just...
I guess no one really knows.
No one really did, but that's
no, no. He didn't really record times and stuff. I mean, I think that kind of goes back to, like, how some of them would be really slow, you know, because you just want, some days you just physically can't do the pace. He didn't really take record times. There's one year I think we've got, like, from his diaries where he recorded his mileage, and he was, like, averaging, I think it was like 145 miles a week, which is a lot even today. For an elite athlete, so it's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
You know, a vast amount of that was subdivided into 400 meter chunks.
There we go.
There's an event as well. So Thames Valley Harriers are putting on the Emil Zatopek Run on the 17th of September, and that's taking place at Wormwood Scrubs Linford Christie Athletic Stadium. That's over in West London. Proceeds from the starting fees go towards the Zatopek Athletics Fellowship, which I think is helping to support underprivileged children to get into athletics. So all round, great thing to get involved with. There's a 5K, a 3K and a 2K. And it's around a track, of course.
Well, I mean, and anyone else out there who feels the need, go put on an event. Yeah. Let us know if you do, how it goes. And celebrate the great man.
I think that's enough, isn't it?
I mean, I've received a great education.
You should go and read Richard Asquith's book. It's really good.
What's it called?
Today We Die a Little.
Oh, he's stolen. Oh, okay. Yeah, he's pinched
slightly
unoriginal.
He pinched a quote, yeah. But there's other things that happen with Zatopek. So there's a musical on Zatopek called, I think it's called Courier, but like French, based on a novel, I think. Yeah. And there was another musical bit that was the same length as his best 10K time. So it's like a 26-minute... And I think it was like an orchestral piece. So he inspires these works of art in a way that other runners tend not to. His influence, he obviously inspires lots of people from, you know, in many different ways. Yeah.
Well, we've recorded almost 28 minutes, so that's ruined it. We could have gone for 26.
I think he is, it's PB was like, it is just under 29, I think.
Right, okay. Right,
he was the first runner to run under 30 minutes, I think, for a 10K.
Yeah.
And he smashed it.
Yeah.
Well, we better round this up quickly.
All right, quickly. That brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Thanks very much to our special guest, Kate Carter, and of course to Emil Zatopek for the inspiration. Happy 100th anniversary to you. Yeah.
Subscribe to some stuff everything will be... No, I jest. You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World. Go to hearstmagazines.co.uk/ the Runners World podcast. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe. It makes us very happy. And you'll hear from us next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.